This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. Before we get to our stories this week, I want to remind everyone you can find more old-time radio at relicradio.com, past episodes of Case Closed, and more from the series you're going to hear today. And while you're there, if you click on that donate button, it's very helpful. Your support is how all of this is made possible and how the shows keep coming to you every week. You can also visit donate.relicradio.com. It's a shortcut that'll take you to the same page. But if you're able to help out, give that button a click. And as always, my thanks to those who have helped out. And today, we're going to hear first from the Crime Club with their episode, The Corpse Wore a Wig. That one aired May 8th, 1947. That'll be followed up with Richard Diamond, Private Detective, and the Brown Envelope Case. That episode's from December 7th, 1951.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. The corpse wore a wig. Yes, we have that Crime Club story for you. Come right over. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The book is on this shelf. Here it is, The Corpse Wore a Wig, by George Bagby. The very intriguing story of a method of dying that was as deadly as murder. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. It was a few minutes before noon, and Inspector Schmidt was already having his troubles in his office at New York City's police headquarters. As a matter of fact, he was having his hands full, rubbing his aching feet. And oh, how they ached.
All right, you bloodless devil, you. Hello, Schmidt talking. What do you want?
Inspector, this is Cassidy.
Cassidy, huh? That's a big help. Which Cassidy are you?
The sergeant, sir. I suppose it's wondering you are what me, an Inspector McKee man, is doing on one of your cases. Well, you see, it's like
I don't start wondering until I know what you're talking about, Cassidy.
Oh, sure. And it's right you are. You know, the good Inspector McKee went on his vacation last night.
Yes. But what's that got to do with me?
Well, I'm working for you now. Inspector McKee's orders.
Oh, my aching feet.
That's the reason, sir. Well, I'm down here in the coroner's autopsy room. You know that suicide cadaver that was brought in this morning?
I had him brought in. That's Dr. Jeremy Bullock. I wanted an autopsy done.
It's been done. And it was no suicide, Inspector.
What?
Clear and simple. An open and shut case of murder.
Let me talk to the coroner.
Well, he just left a few minutes ago. He got a call to go out on another killing. And he asked me...
Stay where you are. I'll be down as soon as I get my shoes on and learn to walk again. All right, Cassidy. What's this about murder?
There's the mortal remains of Dr. Jeremy Bullock, Inspector Schmidt, on that table. And here's the coroner's report, sir.
Thanks.
It's enough to make you wonder what people will do next a case like this. In all my 32 years on the police force...
Shut up, Cassidy.
Yes, sir.
Time of death between 11 o'clock and midnight.
Last night.
Contents of stomach, rye, whiskey, and chloral hydrate.
That's a sleeping medicine.
Darn it, Cassidy. There's nothing here that I didn't know before. I found the bottle of chloral on the desk in Dr. Bullock's consulting room. Where does the murder come in?
It was no overdose of medicine that killed him, Inspector.
No?
No, according to what the coroner told me, there ain't enough of that stuff in the cadaver to be cause of death.
Well, why isn't that on the report?
Oh, now, don't blame the poor fella. He's doing the whole job alone, because the rest of the staff is out giving them smallpox vaccinations.
All right, Cassidy. What killed Dr. Bullock?
He was shot in the head, sir.
What's that?
It's a fact. And at very close range, too. There's powder marks and burns all over.
Are you trying to tell me I looked at that corpse less than 3 hours ago and didn't see a bullet hole in the head?
Well, nobody seen it, not even the coroner. Till the wig came off.
The what?
Like it was his own hair, it was. The coroner was just about to perform an autopsy on the brain when it happened.
I see.
It was a moment for Starthouse. Oh, you Inspector.
Right through the top of the head. Where's the bullet, Cassidy?
Here it is, sir. Here it is. It's a slug from a .25.
Small, huh? But why did this guy need a wig? He's got more hair than I have.
Now, that's the one thing I couldn't understand. The wig he was wearing was the exact duplicate of the hair that was growing right out of his head. That's it on the chair.
Now, bring it here.
Yes. Well, yes, it's a puzzler, all right. Because there's only blood on the inside of this thing, on the lining.
No bullet hole?
No, sir.
Mm-hmm. Then Dr. Bullock wasn't wearing it at the time he was killed. It was put on his head afterward.
Yes, sir.
Come on, Cassidy. You'll take a ride uptown to Dr. Bullock's place.
Yes.
This time I'm going to do a complete job on it. And on that cute little nurse of his, too, Miss Teresa Chalmers, if she's still around.
Yes, yes, I heard you the first time. What do you want?
Who are you?
I beg your pardon. You always lead with that tone of voice.
I sometimes lead with my left. I'm Inspector Schmidt, police headquarters.
But please. Oh, my goodness. Well, come right in. I didn't mean to be brusque. But there's so much to do here.
Yeah.
So much. Oh, dear. I suppose this character with you is a policeman, too.
Why, listen, you...
Hold it, Cassidy.
But he called me a character, Inspector.
This terrible day, this dreadful day...
What are you doing here?
I'm Spencer Talcott, scalp specialist. My salon is just around the corner from here, one flight up. I give treatments for every known variety of scalp disorder. I also give beauty treatments, hair waving, rinses of every description. My salon is the byword...
Have you got a card?
Yes.
Keep it. Now, Mr. Talcott, what are you doing here?
I heard about the horrible tragedy, Jeremy's, Dr. Bullock's suicide. I was in the midst of giving someone a treat when my assistant, Miss Foley, brought me the news. You can just imagine how I felt.
Not now, if you don't mind.
Jeremy Bullock, suicide. Unbelievable. He was so perfectly balanced. Good heavens, Inspector, what are you doing?
Taking off my shoes. Any objections?
Well, I must say...
Well, don't.
So you're a scalp specialist, huh? What do you know about wigs?
Wigs? Are you talking to me?
I hope so.
I don't know anything about wigs. My job is to do everything I can to avoid them for my clients. I am a scientist.
Yeah. Where's the girl?
Would you be crudely referring to Dr. Bullock's nurse?
Where is she, Talcott?
Oh, well, you didn't have to shout, Inspector. Chalmers is resting in Dr. Bullock's living quarters. The shock of her employer's unexpected death, I'm afraid.
Tell her to come in here.
Inspector, the poor child is just a tangle of nerves. Couldn't you forego the usual procedure?
Get going, Talcott.
Good. You give me no alternative. If only there were not so many brutes in this world to tell decent people where to go.
And that calls me a character.
Forget it, Cassidy. You notice anything about this place that's out of line?
Only that worm that just crawled out of here. If I were a private citizen without the dignity of a whole department to uphold, I'd show... Why, Inspector, this room is all wrong.
Thanks for the cooperation.
But the furniture's old and broken down. Now, this is a high-class building in a fine high-class neighborhood.
Pretty expensive, huh?
Well, if I'm any judge of rentals, it's more than the likes of me can... Well, I'll be an Englishman.
What's the matter, Sergeant?
Now, what would that dirty, dilapidated moose head be doing on the wall of a doctor's waiting room?
A moose head with one eye and a crack under the chin.
It ain't the sort of thing that gives peace of mind to the sick and the troubled, is it now?
Not exactly, Cassidy. But it is something to wonder about.
Inspector Schmidt.
Oh, Miss Chalmers.
Mr. Talcott said you wanted to see me.
Mm-hmm. Come in. We don't have to talk long distance.
I'm not feeling well, Inspector. I hope you'll understand.
Don't expect him to do anything so human, my dear. I told him exactly how miserable you were, but he insisted
Cassidy,
on your...
Yes.
Go through this place and see what you can pick up.
I'll do that, sir.
Start with the consultation room. That's where the body was found.
Yes, sir. The consultation room. Well, must be that room.
Now, Miss Chalmers.
What do you want? I told you everything hours ago.
You told me you came to work this morning and found Dr. Bullock sitting at his desk, dead. That isn't everything, young lady.
What?
I'd like to know more about Dr. Bullock. Why a sloppy waiting room like this, and why that moose head?
I don't know, Inspector.
How long have you been his nurse?
6 months.
What kind of people came into this dump of an office?
All kinds. What are you getting at?
Miss Chalmers, I've been a policeman too long not to recognize a phony setup.
You saw nothing wrong with it this morning.
Bright girl. I wasn't looking for the same kind of evidence.
The same kind... Inspector.
Yes, you're catching on fast. Jeremy Bullock didn't commit suicide.
I knew it. He took an overdose of that chloral hydrate by mistake. I knew he wouldn't kill himself.
You're so right. He was murdered.
Murdered?
Murdered?
You take second money, Talcott.
What of all the ridiculous, utterly fantastic...
Now go back to your stall.
What you won't think of next, you policeman. Good heavens.
Go back, Talcott, or I'll have Cassidy give you a scalp treatment.
Oh, good gracious.
I don't believe it. It can't be true.
Somebody dropped enough chloral hydrate into some rye whiskey to put Dr. Bullock to sleep. And then shot him in the head.
In the head? Oh, I know this is a trick. You're only fishing.
The top of the head, Miss Chalmers. Did you ever see this wig before?
No. And what's more, wait a minute.
Yeah?
That looks like Jerry's hair.
Jerry, huh?
Was he?
No, he wasn't. How long has it been Jerry, Miss Chalmers?
We were going to be married in 2 weeks.
Is that so?
I know what you're thinking. He was old enough to be my father. But I didn't care. I loved him.
Well, there's no law against it. Yet.
Inspector, was Jerry really murdered?
Would you like to see his body again?
Talcott, she killed him. Kate Foley killed him.
Kate, my assistant? Well, you must be out of your mind.
She threatened him. She was here yesterday screaming bloody murder because he was going to marry me.
Don't stop, Miss Chalmers. This is becoming very interesting.
She said she'd kill me, too. That jealous lunatic. She had no claim on Jerry. He never promised to marry her.
How do you know?
Well, suppose he did and he changed his mind. He didn't love her. That's no reason to be murdered.
Yeah. Talcott, would Kate Foley be in your finger-waving paradise now?
Of course. But, my dear Inspector, you can't be thinking that...
I'm going to tell you, huh? Come on, I want to get her side of the story and quick.
But, Kate, she's one in a million. Expert assistant.
Oh, I almost forgot my shoes.
Dear me. What am I going to do?
Don't say another word. The minute I get into these, I start hating things. All things.
Kate. Oh, Catherine! Miss Foley!
Save your breath, Talcott. The bird has flown.
But she left the door unlatched, and she has appointments.
It could be she's got other things on her mind. Well, where does she live?
She didn't run away, Inspector. Oh, dear, such a splendid assistant. And with just the right attitude...
Miss Foley's address, Talcott.
Yes, yes, it's in my book, right there on the desk. How can you be so unsympathetic?
It's a tough world. Say, this is quite a display of bottles you've got in this cabinet.
Aye? Oh, those, my products.
Talcott's dandruff lotion, Talcott's henna rinse, Talcott's golden rinse, Talcott's hair dye black, Talcott's hair dye brown, Talcott's for dry scalp, Talcott's for oily scalp. You believe in Talcott's, don't you?
Those are my own concoctions, Inspector. I'm a scientist.
Oh, I see. Dr. Bullock was about 55, wasn't he?
About.
And not a gray hair in his head.
Oh, there were many, my good man, many. But thanks to Talcott's hair dye black...
He was able to fool the ladies. All right, let's get back to Miss Foley.
It won't be necessary to go to her home, Inspector. Dear child left this note for me. She's gone to lunch.
Where?
For goodness sakes, how should I know? Miss Foley has a life of her own. She doesn't have to tell me.
What time will she be back?
She has an appointment with a very distinguished Park Avenue matron at 4 o'clock.
That gives me 2 hours to...
Inspector Schmidt.
I was just leaving, Cassidy.
Yes, sir. The young lady told me where to find you, and I ran as fast as my leg could get...
What is it?
Well, sir, it's evidence I've located. Real evidence.
In Dr. Bullock's office?
In his file of cases. You know the file where a doctor keeps the records of his patients?
I know.
Well, sir, there was nothing in it. Not one record of a single patient. And that set me thinking...
Sergeant, what about the evidence?
Well, I'm coming to that, sir. It was thinking I was something kosher. And then I looked and I found it in the bottom drawer of the desk. In a medical book.
You found what?
This card, Inspector, with Louis Denby's name and address on it.
Louis Denby?
St. Louis, the slick artist that gave us all the trouble 8 years ago.
But he disappeared. Nobody ever saw him again.
Nobody but the dead Dr. Bullock, sir. Because there's his name and address in the card. And it says...
974 West 52nd Street. Let's go, Cassidy. We'll find out the connection between Bullock and Denby.
Inspector Schmidt.
What do you want, Talcott?
What shall I say to Miss Foley when she returns?
Tell her not to get lost. She's got an appointment with me, too. All right, Cassidy.
Well, what do you know? This fella believes in advertising, doesn't he? Talcott's dandruff lotion, Talcott's hair dye black...
Come on. We've given him enough free time.
Yes. Are we going to pay Louis Denby a visit?
You are. I'm going back to headquarters.
Oh, it's your feet again.
My feet and my head. But in between, there's a hunch I'll do better at headquarters than anywhere else. Oh.
Are you having a good lunch, Kate?
Oh, you checking up on me, Mr. Talcott?
We needn't be so formal, dear.
With you, how can a girl be otherwise?
I've just done you a tremendous favor and at a great risk to my soul.
I'll bet. How much is it going to cost me?
I told the police I didn't know where you were, but of course I knew all along.
Police?
I knew you're a child of habit, that you eat in this dreadful place every day.
Nevertheless, what do the police want with me?
A certain Inspector Schmidt is frightfully upset about the death of Jeremy Bullock.
So?
Seems your friend did not commit suicide.
What?
He was murdered.
You're crazy.
Oh, yes. The police have all the proof they need. He was shot.
Oh, no.
Kate, where were you last night between 11 o'clock and midnight?
Say, who appointed you Chief Constable of Madison Avenue?
The police are going to ask you the same question, dear.
Yeah, why?
Inspector Schmidt knows that you threatened to kill Jeremy.
Did I? When?
Yesterday afternoon. You was mad as a hatter because Jeremy threw you over for tracer.
Oh, so that's it.
Isn't funny, Kate. If anything should happen to you...
It won't.
I wouldn't know where to look for another assistant.
Have some coffee, Spencer, and I'll tell you the story of my life.
Oh, you don't have to.
Oh, but I do. Jeremy Bullock never meant any more to me than you did.
Now, look here, Catherine.
Nothing personal. He was a guy I went out with a few times. I went out with you, too, didn't I? Sure, but did we ever talk of getting married?
Well, not the marrying kind.
Neither was he. He liked women, but too many of them.
Oh, dear, it gets more and more and more complicated. Why did Teresa tell Inspector Schmidt?
Oh, so that's where he got it, huh?
Naturally, didn't you know?
No, my pudgy little lamb. I thought it was from one of the other 2,000. Well, goodbye for now.
Where are you going?
To choke somebody with a wagging tongue.
But, Catherine, you didn't have your coffee. Oh, dear. I wonder if she put too much sugar in it.
Teresa, darling.
Kate.
So you're still holding down the fort. You're not in the payroll anymore, honey.
You can't come in here.
Prove it. I used to be wrestling champ of the finger waving league. Nobody ever beat me.
What do you want?
A heart-to-heart talk. And yours better be wide open or I'll stop it for good.
You're going to kill me.
Well, that's up to you. Why did you tell the police I threatened to kill Jerry?
Because you did. You said that if he married me...
I know what I said, but why did you tell the police?
What did you expect me to do? Jerry was murdered.
So right away you set me up for the frying pan.
You robbed me of the only man I ever loved.
Oh, that's corny, Teresa.
I don't care what it is. It's the truth. And I'm not going to see you get away with it.
You're not going to see anything, honey, unless you start telling the whole truth.
Kate.
I've put a lot of curls in hair in my time. I wouldn't like to put one in your neck.
Help! Help!
You little fool. What are you trying to do? Start a riot? Say when and I'll let you breathe again. You've got a lot of talking to do, and you're not doing me any good yelping into my hand. All right. Don't try to catch any more flies.
You almost smothered me.
Almost never counts. Well, shall we talk now?
If there's any...
When I came in here last night at 10 o'clock, you ran into the examination room and locked yourself in.
I didn't want another scene with you.
That's not what Jerry told me.
Huh?
He said you were crying.
That's not so.
He also told me that you and he were in the midst of a terrible bust.
What?
He wasn't going to marry you.
Now, see here, Kate, if you're making this
up... I left at 10:15, you were still in the examination room where Jerry kept all his medicines and drugs.
He never had chloral hydrate.
Who's going to believe you?
But I...
It doesn't pay to talk out of turn, does it, Teresa?
I left a few minutes after you did.
Good for you, but who saw you?
Why, the...
No, you're wrong, honey. There was no night watch in this building last night. No doorman.
You can't prove I was here last night, Kate.
That's right.
And if you say anything about it, I'll deny it. It'll be your word against mine.
That's what it is now. About my threat to kill Jerry and about everything else. Now, what were you crying about last night?
It's none of your business.
Oh, please don't be cute. I've been around a long time.
That's too bad.
And I knew Jerry before you did. He told you last night that he never intended to marry you. Shall I go on?
I can't stop you.
He also told you that he was using you to get rid of me.
What? But
I'm a veteran of the same dirty war that licked you. Jerry used that stunt on me to get rid of a previous commitment.
Oh.
So we're two of a kind. You fight for your life, and I'll fight for mine. Maybe, if we say the right things to the right people, we'll both live to a ripe old age.
Yes? Yes, Captain. Put some men to work on it right away. Okay. Now get the board to switch me to the toxicologist. Oh, now what? Hello, Inspector Schmidt talking.
Sergeant Cassidy at this end, sir.
Well, hold it. I'm on the interoffice line. Hello, Dr. Jones. Schmidt. I want a complete story on everything chloral hydrate is used for. Yeah. Get the report down to me as soon as it's ready. All right. Go ahead, Cassidy.
Thank you, sir. It's bad news, Inspector.
You don't say. What is?
I'm calling from Louis Denby's place of business. And it's one of the most remarkable enterprises for an old-time crook I've ever seen.
What about Louis?
He's stretched out in the middle of the floor.
What's that?
In the showroom, sir. And it was a bullet from a .25 that put an end to his lifelong career of crime.
Murdered? Well, I'll be...
Yes, Inspector, I felt exactly the same way about it.
How do you know it was a .25 that killed him?
Well, sir, the bullet went right through his body and packed itself in the wall. He was a very skinny fella.
It was a .25 that killed Dr. Bullock, too. Okay, Cassidy, I'll be there in 20 minutes. Yeah, right through the heart at close range. He's been dead around 6 hours.
Somebody didn't want Louis to talk, sir.
Thanks for telling me. But why, Cassidy? That's the question.
Well, Inspector Smith, it's all in the record.
What record?
Louis. When I came to this little bare room with the mirrors all around the walls, the first thought that came into my mind was, why a bare room with mirrors? So I made a thorough investigation.
Yeah?
It was in that room over there that I found the reason.
Keep going, Cassidy.
A factory where Louis Denby manufactured wigs.
What?
Yes, sir. All colors and all descriptions.
Good Lord. Bullock gets a wig from Denby, and they're both killed by the same caliber gun. We've got to find out why, Cassidy.
Well, sir, it's about that record I was telling you. After I see what the setup was here, I decided to look
just
around...
Just tell me about the record.
I found it on this card in the drawer of Louis' work table.
Now, let me see it. Dr. Jeremy Bullock, 123 Main Drive, St. Louis. Well, this is a business card.
It's on the other side, the information that might
January 6, 1940, lead poisoning.
In St. Louis.
Lead poisoning. Chloral hydrate, a wig, a moose head. Cassidy, we're almost in.
The devil, you say?
Now go back to headquarters, get the St. Louis police on the phone. I want a full report on Dr. Jeremy Bullock up to the time he left the city.
Would you be saying that...
Later, if I'm right. Now I've got to pick up some suspects and hold a conference in Dr. Bullock's office.
But, Inspector, my goodness, you must try to understand.
Sit down, Talcott. You make my feet tired.
But you have no right to detain Miss Foley. She has appointments. You're ruining my business.
Don't disturb him, Spencer. I like it here. It's almost like a vacation.
Miss Foley, how long have you been in New York?
All my life, honey. I'm from Brooklyn, and I root for the Giants. Would you call me a traitor?
Don't tempt me. How about you, Miss Chalmers?
I came here from Philadelphia 2 years ago.
You're next, Talcott.
Appointments are going to waste, and you dare hold a geography class.
How about it? Where did you float in from?
I don't float. I'm a native New Yorker. And if you don't stop asking this ridiculous... I'm going to...
Shut up. So none of you has ever been in St. Louis, huh?
What?
And I suppose not one of you ever heard of Louis Denby. Not even you, Miss Chalmers?
No. Who is he?
A man who knew too much about lead poisoning.
What?
I know lots of people who know too much about lead poisoning, Inspector, and wish they didn't.
Thanks, Miss Foley.
Artists and painters.
Would you know what usually happens to them?
Are you kidding? They lose their hair. They even get bald.
But Dr. Bullock didn't get bald, did he?
He didn't have lead poisoning, dearie.
He did, 7 years ago. He had to have a wig.
But Jerry wasn't bald.
No, Miss Chalmers, he wasn't. But he was a terrible mess at one time. What did Dr. Bullock keep in that moose head?
In that... No, nothing.
Huh. Suppose we find out. Do you think this couch will mind if I stand on it?
What are you going to do?
Find out if this crack under the chin was a result of a fight with another moose or the work
Holy
of...
Holy angels. Spencer, look, there's a door in the darn thing.
I'm not going to look. It's too disgusting.
Well, what won't Mother Nature think of next?
And I'm not going to stay here while a vandal wastes my precious time.
Talcott.
You have nothing more to say to me, Inspector.
There are two blue uniforms out in the hall. And they're very anxious to go for a ride.
You've got no right to keep me prisoner. I won't stand for it.
Say, Inspector, did that wad of paper come out of that moose hen?
Surprise, Miss Foley?
Well, aren't you? Since when does a moose read newspapers?
From St. Louis. And papers 7 years old at that. But there's something else. A list of some of the worst gunmen in New York. What about these, Miss Chalmers?
I don't know anything about them.
Hmm. You wouldn't even try to remember, would you?
I said I don't know.
All right, we'll give you a chance at police headquarters.
You're not going to arrest me. I haven't done anything.
Oh, no one ever does. Come here, Talcott.
What do you want?
So you've never been in St. Louis, huh?
I didn't say that, Inspector. I said I was a native New Yorker.
So you did. Now tell me your name's always been Talcott. What? Aren't you going to? Are you afraid of this news photo of a man called Tal Spencer? Who's the image of you?
Well, so I did make a mistake. I did manufacture a hair dye that Dr. Bullock and other people used that had a lead compound in it.
This paper says that you were sued by 128 people and that you skipped town.
Naturally. I didn't have enough money to face it. But I'm ready to pay all damages now. Of course, it was a terrible mistake 7 years ago. But you can't hang a man for that.
Not for that, but for murder. Let's take a ride downtown. There's so much I'd like you to tell me about the truth. Yes, yes, Schmidt talking. What do you want?
Sergeant Cassidy, sir.
What? Do you know what time it is?
Uh-huh. It's exactly 9:42. I'm sorry to be disturbing you at home, but
You're sorry. I was giving my feet a hot bath, and you dragged me across the living room to the telephone. What for?
Well, I'm still down here at headquarters. I just got a teletype report. Dr. Bullock was no doctor. He lost his license 4 years ago because he...
Patching up the wounds of robbers and gunmen. Yes, that's what he was doing in New York, too.
Oh, my. Why did that Talcott kill Bullock?
His real name was Spencer, and Bullock was blackmailing him.
Oh, that again.
Yeah. Spencer made up a hair dye in St. Louis that almost ruined Bullock's scalp. It was a big scandal.
Oh, one more question, and then I'll be leaving you alone to take care of your feet. How did you fix it on Spencer?
The chloral hydrate. Used as a base in most dandruff remedies, and Spencer Talcott used it in his.
Oh, my. You know, I always say, when it comes to beating the police department of our great city of New York, a criminal has to
good
get
night,
up...
Good night, Cassidy.
Good night, Inspector Schmidt.
And so closes tonight's Crime Club book, The Corpse Wore a Wig, based on a story by George Bagby. Stedman Coles did the radio adaptation. Roger Bauer produced and directed. Cameron Purdum played Inspector Schmidt. Ted Osborne was heard as Spencer Talcott. Barry Thompson was Cassidy. Elspeth Eric was Kate Foley. And Elaine Kent played Teresa Chalmers. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello. I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Yes, come over a week from tonight. Good. We have a very unusual story of a double cross that doubled and redoubled with murder. It's called Death is a Genius. In the meantime... Well, in the meantime, there is a new Crime Club book available this week and every week at bookstores everywhere. Yes, it's available now. Fine. And we'll look for you next week.
This program came from New York. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
makers of Camel Cigarettes present Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Listen to this convincing proof of Camel mildness. Hundreds of men and women from coast to coast smoked only Camels for 30 days. Every week, leading throat specialists made thorough examinations of their throats. The throat specialists reported not one single case of throat irritation due to smoking Camels. Start your own 30-day Camel mildness test. Let your throat tell you how mild Camels are day after day. Then you'll know why Camel is by far America's most popular cigarette. Here transcribed is Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Busy day for the Humane Society. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a... Music critic. Diamond Detective Agency, we solve all crimes, we frown on sin, but the weather is awful and we'd rather stay in.
Who wouldn't?
Oh, hi, Helen.
Hi.
Did you like that slogan?
Yeah. It gives me an idea. I want to report a crime.
Well, hide the body till tomorrow, dear. It's raining.
You can lose your license with an attitude like that.
Oh, baby, you certainly know where I'm ticklish. Where's the crime?
You're still single. So am I.
Well, in your case, that is a crime. In mine, it's just a misdemeanor. Anyway, I can't discuss an assignment I'm still working on.
I'll help you solve it. I want to give myself up.
Sorry, no case.
Why not?
I've seen you in an evening dress. Nobody could pin anything on you.
Would it interest you to know the piano tuner is here and very good looking?
Pulling wires will get you nowhere. Is my picture still on the piano? The one where I look like a tough detective?
No, I threw it in the fireplace. I love to sit by the fire and dream of you. Besides, oh, did it thunder down there?
Yeah. Small world, isn't it? I've got to hang up, dear. I've got work to do.
Well, come over tonight. You can try the piano and my patience. What work have you got to do?
I have to fill my lighter and dry my shoes.
What are you talking about?
Well, I smashed my car up in a collision and had to walk to work. Work, he said, smiling through his tears.
Where's your car now?
In Larson's garage.
You need a rich wife who can give you a chauffeur.
Hang up, doll. You're getting too near my prize. Bye.
Bye.
I looked at the door, hoping a wealthy client with an easy case would walk in. When that Connecticut car with a lemon-headed driver folded my fenders an hour before, I knew I was in for a repair job that would spring my bill clip. So I called the garage to see whether I should start saving up for it or just jump out of the window.
Larson's garage.
Larson? Diamond speaking. How does it look?
Looks like you're going to be a pedestrian for about 3 weeks, Mr. Diamond. But it ain't all bad. The frame's out of line only a couple inches.
Save the silver lining for the brake drums, Junior. You never call me Mr. Diamond unless there's going to be more than $100. How much, roughly?
Oh, I'd say $250.
I said roughly, not brutally.
Anyway, why are you calling me up, Diamond? Didn't your guy tell you?
My guy?
Yeah, the big boy you sent over to get your stuff out of the car.
Wait a minute. Did he say I sent him...
Hang up, Diamond. Stop talking and hang up.
Have a chair, friend. Be with you in a moment. Larson, was this guy of mine a thick-set, moronic-looking oaf with a greasy hat and a broken nose?
The next one is through your ears, Diamond. Hang up!
I'll talk to you later, Larson. I just heard a report that requires my attention. Do you realize, friend, that you made a big hole in my wastebasket? I suppose I wanted to fill it with water and wash my hair. How could
Shut up! Where is it? I said, where is it? Talk!
You told me to shut up. You can't have it both ways. Len, I've had a bad morning. My car is smashed up, and my feet are wet, and things look bad in Egypt. As the old song says, I love a charade, but not this much.
Don't play cozy. The stuff in your car.
Oh. Well, now, let me think. There was a box of cleansing tissues in the glove compartment. Some golf clubs in the trunk. Probably some hairpins down behind the seat. I've told that girl 100 times.
After the wreck. After the wreck. Everybody was throwing stuff back in the car. We want the brown envelope.
Brown envelope? Friend, I never saw it.
No.
Scout's honor. See, I'll cross my hide
and... Keep your hands down!
Homicide, Lieutenant Levinson speaking.
Rick Walt, get over here right away.
I'm busy.
You better get over here. I've done it again. There's a dead man in my office.
What?
Just get over here and bring me a new wastebasket.
Yeah, I know him. Paul Scannell, hoodlum third class. Car stripper, nightclub bouncer, Central Park mugger, and manic depressive about town. Last arrest 2 years ago. They didn't want him for anything right now.
You could have had him for assaulting wastebaskets. Who was he with?
I don't know. He's been out of circulation. What makes you think he was with anybody?
Plural personal pronoun. He said, we want the envelope.
You and your education. If you hadn't been a little faster than he was, you'd be getting your doctor's degree right now. Incidentally, were you expecting something?
Only the usual things, death and taxes. Two men with whiskers, why?
Wearing your clavicle gun in the office, out of character. Comfort-loving type.
A shrewd observation, Walter. And it was. Normally, I'd have shucked the gun the minute I got in the office. When my car got hit, the pistol was knocked out of the clip under the dash, so I stuck at my shoulder holster. There were 6 police officers and 1,300 helpful citizens on the scene, and I didn't want to linger for extra questions. I told Walt about Scannell going through my car at Larson's garage. He looked thoughtful, and when Walt looks thoughtful, he's thinking. The police force could use a lot of Levinsons.
Brown envelope with murder in it. Rick, there's more of this than a traffic brawl. What did you bring here from the scene?
Just my wet feet and my briefcase. The one I always carry to make me look businesslike.
You couldn't look businesslike if you carried a cash register. Look, let's reconstruct a little. Take it from the crash.
Okay, okay. Slippery streets. A gray coupe with Connecticut plates came barreling through the stoplight. I tried to get over, but there was a curbstone and a 30-story office building in the way. Remind me to write my congressman about the real estate lobby.
You mention my name, you'll get a nasty answer. Go on, will you?
Well, we smacked. You mean you didn't hear it? Only 24 blocks away?
Oh, sure, but I thought it was just another atom bomb.
Mm. Well, 4 doors flew open, 2 on my car, 2 on the gray coupe, stuff all over the street. Papers, spare parts, broken glass, my bridge work, the usual debris. While the other driver and I were exchanging information and insults, a few warm-hearted bystanders, seeing there's nothing worth stealing, threw the stuff back into the cars. Mine was all the way to the garage.
How about the other fellas?
The other fellow was a girl. Well, you may say so, officer. Platter of goodies. Friendly, too, in a nervous sort of way.
You'll get a name and address?
Certainly. You think I'm an idiot?
I can't answer that without breaking up a beautiful friendship. Where's the data?
The stuff is in my briefcase.
Where's the briefcase?
In my desk. You don't ask me where the desk is. You're sitting on it. Here.
Give me.
Take.
What a mess. Reminds me of my wife's handbag.
I wouldn't know. I've never been in your wife's handbag.
Mr. Diamond, this is business. Shall we examine the contents of the briefcase?
Pray do.
Thank you. Item, paperback book, a weekend painter. Planning on painting a weekend?
Man's entitled to a hobby if he ever gets time for it, which he doesn't.
Item, notebook, black.
Keep out of that.
Killjoy. Item, book of matches, no printing. Item, clip of cartridges. Item, card notifying a dental appointment. This morning.
I couldn't make it. I have to cross that bridge work when I find it.
Yeah. Well, that's all there is. No brown envelope.
No, I wouldn't have a brown envelope. Never use that color. It makes me look sallow.
You're not much help.
Well, do something, Fatty. Something. Why don't you just send all my envelopes to the lab and get the glue analyzed? I had a horse last week that dropped dead in the far turn, and I... Diamond Detective Agency, detecting done by day or night and holidays, if the fee is right.
Diamond, this is Sergeant Fraser. Lieutenant Levinson there?
Yeah, he's here in a briefcase for you, Walt.
Thanks. Levinson.
Fraser here.
No, hi.
That express company robbery that happened this morning, we picked up the getaway car. Thought you wanted to know right away.
Yeah, thanks, Sergeant. Car abandoned?
Yeah, seemed to be pretty smashed up, too. Front end all banged in. Gray coupe with Connecticut plates.
Okay, hold it, Verroot. Wait a minute. Gray coupe, Rick, that car you banged into this morning, gray coupe, Connecticut plates?
That's right. Why? I'll
tell you in a minute. Sergeant.
Yeah?
Get with the traffic bureau. I want everything on a collision at Madison and 43rd. Everything, including a weather report.
Rain, followed by Saturday and Sunday.
And Fraser.
Yes, sir.
The driver of the car. Get out a warrant for... Rick, what did the driver give her name as?
Markham. Dora Markham, housewife.
Dora Markham, Sergeant. Probably phony, but make it out anyway. I'll be back at the office soon. Rick, this accident of yours is something big.
You should see my repair bill. Well,
shut up and listen, will you? This is serious. Early this morning, the Huxley Express Company was robbed of $600,000.
Wow.
Yeah, now get this. The car you smashed into was the getaway car. Whoever this dame is who was driving, she's tied in somehow with a gang who pulled the job.
Mm-hmm. Well, Fatty, this is all very enlightening, but go a little farther. Why did this Scannell guy come here looking for a brown envelope?
I don't know, but I'm going back to the precinct. This is the first break we've had on this case. And you better keep your eyes open and that gun in your shoulder holster.
Can't. Crushes my camels every time I stoop over.
Oh, Rick, for the last time, this is no joking matter. For some reason, that gang thinks you have a brown envelope. That envelope means enough to them to kill for it. Ricky, my boy, up to now, you've been shot with luck. Don't crowd it.
Before we continue with Richard Diamond, here are a few words about smoking enjoyment. Here's the one sensible test of cigarette mildness. Smoke only Camels for 30 days. Pack after pack, you'll enjoy the full, rich flavor that's found only in Camels. And through steady smoking, the only sensible way to judge a cigarette, you'll see for yourself how mild Camels are, how well Camels agree with your throat. In a test supervised by noted throat specialists, hundreds of men and women from coast to coast smoked only Camels for 30 days. The throat specialists made more than 2,000 careful weekly examinations of the throats of these smokers, and they reported not one single case of throat irritation due to smoking Camels. That's conclusive proof of Camels' mildness. Start tonight to make your own Camel 30-day mildness test. Make Camels your steady smoke, and you'll discover just why Camel is America's most popular cigarette by billions.
How mild can a cigarette be? Smoke Camels and see.
And now, back to Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Up until now, as the man said, I had been shot and shot at with luck. I was in the middle of something, but didn't know what. After Levinson left, I sat and stared out the window. It didn't work any harder than that until the phone rang. Diamond Detective Agency, we try to please... Hello? 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 Oh, well, maybe it was the wrong number. Or maybe it was somebody wanting to be sure I was here. I felt like a new clay pipe in a shooting gallery waiting for the sailors on Saturday night. It was a nice little office, but I suddenly didn't like it. I thought I'd go ask Helen about the piano sooner. I liked that idea. So I got up, packed my briefcase, shoved my stuff back in it, and as I zipped it shut, my hand felt a piece of paper stuck underneath it. It was the brown envelope. I got to work on it, and inside was a baggage check, and written on the back of it were two words, Blue Duck. I was just getting...
Don't bother, Miss Diamond. Just give it to me.
Well, hello, Dora Markham, housewife.
I'm not as stupid as Paul Scannell, Mr. Diamond. Also, I'm a better shot.
Well, he wasn't too bad. got my wastebasket right between
you. You talk too much. Get out, turn around, and take off your coat.
Oh, do I have to? It's so pretty. My shirt's wrinkled on account of the rain, and
take it off, or the coroner will cut it off.
Oh, they should have sent you in the first place, Dora. You're much more convincing. Okay, it's off. Look, you're a housewife. There's a button loose on the left sleeve, and
The trousers? Off.
Oh, now, Dora.
The door is closed, and there's a silencer on this gun. I'd love to silence a noisy detective who tried to move in on a off diamond.
Yes, ma'am. Gypsy Rose Diamond. A pretty girl is like a melody.
How have you ever lived this long?
Fresh air, hard work, and green vegetables. Let me show you my diet list. I have it right
here. Stay away from that desk. Now, hand me your coat and trousers. Thank you. Turn around. Walk to the wall with your hands up. Up high. After the next tone signal, Diamond, your phone is being disconnected.
Oh, Dora, you're wonderful. I could go for a strong girl like you, and I would, too, if you didn't have that... Well, you could have said goodbye. Richard Diamond, detective, with no pants. A private eye welcoming his privacy. I looked for the brown envelope. Gone with my wardrobe. I looked at the telephone. Alexander Graham Bell couldn't have fixed it with Don Amici handing in the pliers. I peered out into the corridor, no one in sight, not even an insurance agent or a typewriter salesman. This alone was making history. I wondered if I could trot through the streets to the Fifth Precinct, pretending to be a cross-country runner. No, not in blue silk shorts. I sat down and waited. And waited. And waited. I tried telepathy. Helen, I thought, come and get me and bring me a pair of trousers. Helen, I concentrated, it's Rick. The rain must have done something to Helen's antenna, so I concentrated on Walt. Walt, I thought, and Walt walked in. Well, you're a more sensitive type than I thought, Walt. Did you bring me some trousers?
Some trousers? What's coming off here?
The straight line was too easy, so I passed it up. I told Walt about Dora the housewife and the brown envelope and the baggage check inside it.
Anything else?
Yeah, two words written on the back of the check. Said, blue duck. About that time, Dora interrupted me with her old clothes campaign.
Blue duck. Never heard that before. Blue duck.
Well, there used to be a blue duck nightclub in the West 20s. A real hog wallop. Closed up a year ago for selling to minors.
Keep talking.
All right. But I'll be ad-libbing in a minute. The only thing I know about it is that it was run by Sis Madison and her husband. There's quite a joint there. Hey, yeah? Sis Madison. That's Dora Markham, housewife with the lemon rents and the new name.
This begins to add up. That guy you killed in your office used to work for Sis Madison. There were three people spotted in that Huxley Express robbery. Dave and two guys.
Oh, could have been Sis Madison, her husband, and Scannell.
This is very interesting.
I'll tell you something else very interesting.
What?
I'm freezing. Or is that only interesting to me?
Wait a minute. Fraser.
Yes, sir.
There's a cleaning and plastering shop halfway up the block. Go see if Mr. Diamond's coat and pants are there.
Gray tweed, name in the inside pocket. Get with it, son.
Cleaning shop, Diamond's coat and pants. Yes, sir.
How did you know, Fatty?
Oh, sheer genius. Besides, it's logical. I don't think you'd want to haul them all over town or be seen stuffing them into a garbage can.
Why not? That's where I got them.
Blue duck. I hope you're sure that's what you read on the back of that check.
I'm sure, but it's been closed for years.
Well, we're going down there and open it up.
No.
No what?
No pants.
Don't be so modest.
I'm not modest. I'm cold.
Stand over there. That's it. Come in.
Hey, watch it, Lieutenant. It's just me.
Okay, Fraser. Got Mr. Diamond's clothes?
Yes, sir. I'll press nice, too. Another 10 minutes, the guy would have brought him up here himself.
Really?
Yeah, the lady said her father was waiting for him.
Her father? Walt, give me a gun. This gang will stoop to anything. 10 minutes later, we were on our way to an exit nightclub, the Blue Duck. I sat in front of Levinson's car, trying not to wrinkle my well-pressed trousers. We pulled up half a block from the one-time nightclub.
Where are all the cars? I thought this would be a bigger party. The place isn't a Blue Duck, it's a Dead Duck.
Maybe it's a bigger party than it looks.
Where are you looking?
For a bright cop, Patty, you're a little dull. But everything points to this little disco, so we'll just...
I know. Take a gander at the duck. Gander at the duck.
I heard it the first time. Tell me, Walter, $600,000. Is there a reward?
A reward? Why, you...
Keep your voice down, officer. While you tell me who put you on to the Blue Duck and Sis Matson. Who got shot at, stripped, humiliated, wrecked. Who split 50-50 with the police pension fund?
Should have brought your briefcase. You are a businessman. Come on. Dead duck. I don't think this joint was ever alive.
Maybe they went to a movie. After all, a housewife is entitled to a little recreation, and I don't...
No way. This place has been closed for years. Nobody here.
We want to look around a little.
There ain't nobody here, I told you.
We'll come in anyway.
Walt, get the old guy to turn on some lights.
Ain't no lights.
Must be some lights, Pop. How do you get your reading done?
I spend my time minding my own business, Sonny. Not a bad idea for you either.
You don't mean you think I'm snoopy?
Nothing to see here. Now get out.
We're police officers, Pop. Now find the lights and stop talking so much.
What do you want anyway?
Lights. Didn't you hear what the man said?
All right. Here's the switch.
Place looks like it was never open.
What'd you expect, dancing girls?
You're pretty fresh, you know it. I got half a mind to run you in.
Now, hold it, Walt. You don't want him.
You said it.
Who pays you, Pop?
I don't know. They mail it to me.
Yeah, sure. What's under those stairs?
Tables and chairs.
What's on the second floor?
Nothing. Used to be the office.
All right, I'd like to take a look at it. Come on, Walt.
Okay. Come on, Pop.
I'll stay here.
You'll come with us.
It's bad for my heart climbing up and downstairs.
You don't think maybe there's somebody in the office, do you, Pop?
The place is empty, I tell you.
Come on. Keep up with us, Pop. Are you scared of your heart?
No.
Scared of anything else?
No.
Well, I am. Hold it.
What, Walt?
I heard something.
Rat.
Maybe.
Walt, get out. Rats, huh? Yeah, I guess that fits.
Who's upstairs, Pop?
I don't know. I told you.
They're going to get him, whoever it is. You might as well start talking.
I don't want no trouble.
Now, look, you...
Walt, start firing up toward that landing. Keep him busy. I'll try to get beside the staircase.
Yeah.
For Pete's sake, shoot high.
You figure it's Sis Matson and the husband?
Yeah. Now, start firing. High toward the landing. I started crawling under Walt's fire toward the stairs. I was getting sore. First, this Sis Matson steals my pants, and now she makes me mutt them up. 15 snail crawls later, I was beside the staircase and had a good view of the landing. I could see the man who must be Sis's husband crouched down and firing toward Walt. I raised up. Matson, drop it. Okay, pal.
Good shot, Rick.
Yeah, but not good enough.
All right, Matson, stop shooting. Drop the gun. You've had it.
And come on down here. That's a good boy. Now, where's your wife, Matson?
Who?
Sis Matson.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Your wife, Matson. Come on, don't stall.
Look, you hit me. Get me to a hospital. Huh? I'm hurt bad.
Did you hear him say anything, Walt?
Yeah, but I can't make it out.
Look, you guys, this ain't legal. You got to get me to a doc.
Might be able to understand him if he talked about Sis, though.
Yeah, what about it, Matson?
Look, I don't know. Get me to a doc. I'll talk later.
You'll talk now. You'll lay right there until you do.
All right. The car pulled up outside. See the lights through the window?
Yeah. Quiet.
Sis, get out!
What?
Hold it, honey. Cover, Walt.
What is it?
Diamond's the name, Sis. So maybe you don't recognize me with my pants on.
Rico. What have you done to him?
Only a flesh wound, but he thinks he's bleeding to death.
Ah, nice suitcase you got there, Sis. And it was. When I opened it, I half expected to find a collection of men's trousers. But instead, I found stacks of my favorite color, green. You know, most ducks have only one bill. But lying on the floor of the Blue Duck in a suitcase were 600,000 of them. It had been a colorful day. Gray weather, brown envelopes, blue ducks, and green money. Yes, Ella?
There wasn't any piano tuner here.
Oh, that's too bad.
Too bad?
Mm-hmm. Listen to middle C. Off a full 30 seconds.
I'll call a tuner tomorrow.
I'll call one. I know a dandy. 73 years old. Tuned pianos for Caruso.
Caruso. Who?
Now, easy. You'll hurt Lonzo's feelings.
When you are in love, it's the loveliest night of the year.
Tonight?
Stars twinkle above, and you almost can touch them from here.
Yeah, long arms.
You're reaching.
Words fall into rhyme. Anytime you are holding me near, when you are in love, it's the loveliest night of the year. Waltzing along in a blue, like a breeze drifting over the sand. Thrilled by the wonder of you and the wonderful touch of your hand. And my heart starts to beat like a child when a birthday is near. Oh, kiss me, my sweet.
Is that an invitation?
Oh, it's the loveliest night of the year.
Like it?
Yeah.
What are you staring at?
You. Flattering to me when you show up to get close to welfare. I think I'll kiss you.
Goody.
You need a woman like me, Rick?
There is no woman like you, Helen.
I know it. But you better grab me while I'm available.
Dick Powell will return in just a minute. Here's a wonderful Christmas shopping tip. Give cartons of Camels as Christmas gifts. Camel makes it easy for you with a special Christmas gift carton. It's beautifully designed in holiday colors and has a built-in greeting card right on top of the carton. Be sure to give plenty of Camels this Christmas. It's America's most popular cigarette by billions.
How miles can a cigarette be? Smoke Camel
can see. Here's Dick Powell with a special message.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, every week the makers of Camel cigarettes send thousands of packs of Camels to military hospitals and veterans. That's to help show hospitalized men and women of the armed forces that folks at home haven't forgotten them. This week, the free packs of Camels go to Veterans Hospital, Marion, Indiana, and Sheridan, Wyoming, U.S. Army Station Hospital, Camp Gordon, Georgia, and U.S. Naval Hospital Ship, Repose. Now until next week, enjoy Camels. I always do.
Dick Powell can now be seen starring in the Universal International film You Never Can Tell. Tonight's transcribed adventure of Richard Diamond was written by Dick Quinton, with music by Frank Worth. Our director was Nat Wolf. Virginia Gregg played the part of Helen Asher, and Alan Reed was Lieutenant Levinson. Others in the cast were Kay Stewart, Herb Butterfield, Herb Ellis, and Bob O'Connor.
The bite is out and the pleasure's in when you smoke Prince Albert. It's specially treated not to bite your tongue. The bite is out and the pleasure's in.
That's why pipe smokers will be delighted with Prince Albert for Christmas. The big one-pound tin of Prince Albert comes in a gaily designed holiday package that needs no wrapping. Just write your greeting on the built-in card and present Prince Albert to delighted pipe smokers. Listen next week for another exciting adventure of Richard Diamond. starring Dick Powell. This is your FBI. The official broadcast from the files of the FBI follows immediately. Stay tuned. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is the American Broadcasting Company.
That's the show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember to visit RelicRadio.com for more old-time radio, to find more from Crime Club Richard Diamond, past episodes of this show, and everything else. And as always, click on that donate button while you're there. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio crime on Case Closed.